from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And it's Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve. Russ Jones here, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Indeed, you're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Can you smell the fresh rolls, the turkey, the dressing? My famous cranberry sauce, fresh homemade cranberry sauce will be on the table. Somebody told me the other day, I heard you talk about not eating cranberries out of the can, and he laughed. Javelin Hulsey, Mississippi State Guard, he said, guess what I like to eat? I like to eat cranberry sauce out of the can. And I said, oh, brother, I'll be praying for you. But welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. And indeed, it's a good day to be with you. Much going on, and really so much to be thankful for. But the planet continues to spin. Do not despair. God is in control. And in Washington, D.C., in the House of Representatives, Republicans are going to lose it January 3rd, lose control, lose the majority when they become the minority party. The change in power that the GOP representatives will experience will be fairly dramatic. Elections indeed do have consequences. But does that mean there's a lame duck season for the Republican Party? Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona has some thoughts about that. In just a moment, we'll talk with him about that. What does it mean now for the GOP to be the minority party? Of course, we'll get into some other legislative issues. And CNN, well, it's at it again. This time, Kirsten Powers, says all white women who support Trump, well, guess what? They're racist. It's this value-shaming thing that's going on in our culture. We'll talk with Dr. Carol Swain. She's author, motivational speaker, award-winning political scientist, and a political commentator. And, of course, later in the program, we will have another opportunity to talk with evangelist Alveda King about Thanksgiving and also about what happens when the dust settles. Will the dust settle? She says, you know, we still have a dog in this fight. Do not embrace the lame duck mentality. She'll be here with her thoughts on that. And on November 18th, 1992, the New York Times printed Mississippi Governor Kirk Fortas's statement, "The less we emphasize the Christian religion, the further we fall into the abyss of poor character and chaos in the United States of America." And as we are about this Thanksgiving week, we'll talk about what it means to give thanks and what our founding fathers had to say. Later in the program, we'll talk with Bill Federer, nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch. You can find all this content on TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me at R. Jones Reports. Well, with us now is Congressman Andy Biggs. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. He is a member of the House Judiciary and Science, Space, and Technology Committees, and also a member of the House Freedom Caucus. He's one of the good guys in D.C. that's working hard for the values that are important to you. Congressman Biggs, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, we do hear a lot about this so-called lame duck season. I know there's some things that you have on your mind about that. Tell us about it.
Well, it's an unfortunate term, lame duck, because that allows people to excuse their inaction, if I can put it that way. And mm-hmm. we're going to do a few things, but I really think that we have 2 months left. We should be working the week, you know, of Thanksgiving. We should be working right up to Christmas. Right up till we go again, and we should be doing the things that we should have been doing that to keep faith. Like, we should repeal Obamacare. We should make that a legitimate effort. We should build the wall. We should take the bills that have been languishing for a couple of years that some of us introduced, you know, right at the beginning of a session a couple of years ago, and I think we should try to get those through. This is an opportunity. We should never let time waste.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, I think many of our listeners would be interested to know what happened to Obamacare. Where did it get bogged down, and what got in the cogs to keep it from getting further repeal? I know a lot of efforts were made to improve it or to lessen it, but give us some inside details about that.
Well, my own feeling was that we started off on the wrong foot. before we ever got, before I was even sworn in for this latest session, this latest term, when our leadership decided that instead of just putting a repeal, which is basically a one-sentence bill, just says repeal Obamacare effective this date, whatever, which had been voted on 60 times in the House and, you know, a dozen times and passed in the Senate, they decided to do this three-bucket approach where we repeal a part of it and ask the administration to repeal some of the regulations, and then we do a few things over here. And then we have to do it connected with a budget. We should have done a straight repeal on January 3rd, 2017, when we first got sworn in. And, but because we didn't, we were bogged down with all kinds of policy and procedural problems that prevented us from ever really getting it done. I think that was a failure of leadership. And quite frankly, whenever you have a leadership failure, it comes back to those of us who elect leaders. We failed. We failed at that.
And, you know, folks probably remembered some of that in some districts across the country as far as, you know, how they voted. It's hard to know completely where things kind of went south for some of our, you know, you had some very good colleagues that aren't coming back. You had some good, really good guys who are friends of this program and voices for our listeners that people really valued. So, you know, you got some folks that aren't going to be in the trenches with you. I'll be curious. I'm curious just to know what's on your mind and heart as far as going into the next Congress. How are you going to move forward? What first steps do you see yourself taking?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. And I will say that I lament terribly that we lost so many good people, but we lost it because we failed to deliver on our promise. Let's just be candid. If you don't deliver on your promises, people don't trust you anymore. And so as I look forward to the new session, I'm going to continue to work on the things that I think the American people want, the things that I promised I would do. And that includes the border wall bill that I introduced. We should be doing that next week. We should be voting on that, to be honest with you. And I'm a big believer that where I can agree with you, I will agree with you 100%. But in this political climate, we need people who will articulate our position, who will stand up and bravely make a stand. And that's what I intend to do, is to fight, because I serve on judiciary, as you mentioned. And our new incoming chairman said he wants to impeach Brett Kavanaugh, for Pete's sakes. And he wants to impeach President Trump. And he wants to open up dozens and dozens of new investigations. And I'm like, well, we're going to have to fight on that. So people understand the minority. We have no say in the bills that get heard. We have no say even in the calendar. We have no say in the rules because we're out of control. We are the minority party. And as recently as late last week, when I was meeting with a good group of my colleagues, guys and ladies I love, I don't think they were getting it until the person who called the meeting said, look, you don't understand. We are out of control now. We will be reacting and pushing wherever we can find an opening. That's what our job will be.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Instead of being kind of on the offense, you're on the defense now and reacting to everything in that reactionary mode. And sometimes that reactionary place, not a very good place, is it?
No, you're exactly right, Russ. And I will tell you this. Just think of it this way. If you ever watch football, and I like to watch college football, where we're going to have to do, we're playing defense, but where we can, we want to jump a route now and then and intercept the ball and go forward. We want to cause some turnovers, and that's really
get a sack.
Sack. We need to sack them. We have to sack them. We need to hold firm so that we get an opportunity occasionally to maybe score a defensive touchdown. That's really kind of the mode we're in.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also been involved with passing H.R. 6784, Manage Our Wolves Act. Tell us about that. That's an interesting one I saw on your page.
Yeah. No, so here's the way to think of that bill is all the scientific data says that this top predator, as they've rebounded everywhere that they've been protected. So it's time to remove them from the endangered species list, and our opponents want to keep them on the endangered species list and promulgate them. You know, this has been very controversial. I was trying to get an amendment saying the Mexican gray wolf is now back, which it is, and get it delisted as well. But we have faced this reintroduction of the wolf in habitat in various places in the country, and farmers and ranchers lose livestock. These are dangerous animals, and the folks in Manhattan don't really want you to release that kind of a predator in their neighborhood, but that they think it's okay to release it out here in the West, where we have more open spaces, but we also have lots of livestock that represent people's livelihoods and our food security. So hopefully it's going to get through. We believe it's going to get through the Senate, and if it does, then you'll see the first delisting in many a moon.
We've only got a couple of minutes left. Real quick, you mentioned Obamacare. What else is on your short list of things that need to be tackled here?
Well, I think the border security, it's important for our listeners, your listeners, to understand, quite frankly, that when I talk to Border Patrol, I talk to ICE people, I talk to the head of the Border Patrol Union last week. They want the wall because it slows people down. And we have, just think of it this way, we will let 1.2 million people legally immigrate into the United States this year, but there'll be about 1.5 million who illegally enter and stay in this country. And so we have got to secure our border. And every time anybody starts talking about an amnesty program of any kind, you'll see a surge of 2 to 3 times the monthly apprehensions, because that's how many more people are crossing the border. So that's a big critical thing. And then the other thing I think we have to focus on is balancing the budget, move towards balancing the budget. I don't know if you follow this, but every month we have a new record of federal tax income revenue. And yet we can't seem to close the gap on our spending. So it's not a revenue problem. It is truly a spending problem, and we've got to get that under control. And I've been calling on my colleagues to allow me to sit down with them and work on bringing that budget under control. Those three things right there really are critical to perpetuating the agenda that we've been on, the good economy we've been on, the sense of freedom, and to continue to fight for religious freedom and pro-life issues.
And real quick, when you gather around that table tomorrow with family and friends, what's on your mind? Just a message for our listeners on a personal note on Thanksgiving.
Well, I'm always grateful to be with my family. Grateful for the freedom we have to worship God. Grateful for this country. These things are, and grateful for the men and women who fight to defend our freedoms and the blue line. And I am grateful for the Americans who really believe in God and believe in the freedom and the greatness of this country.
Amen. Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you for your work, and thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you, sir. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Well, coming up next, if you're a white woman, support President Trump, guess what? You just might be a racist, according to CNN's Kirsten Powers. When we return, we'll talk with political commentator Dr. Carol Swain. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Stone, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Make sure you go to TonyPerkins.com. You can find all this great content. Hope you're doing well. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, known as SOCE, claiming that they are fraudulent, ineffective, and harmful. But are they? LGBT activists claim that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed by therapy or counseling. They also claim that people who attempt to change their sexual orientation end up more depressed and suicidal. As it turns out, studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are in fact very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. For a thorough analysis of all the major studies done on the effectiveness of SOCE, visit frc.org/SOCE. Again, that's frc.org/SOCE.
Are you ready to take a stand? Now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just a tap of the screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways that we have to look at this. I think one of the first things is that people will say that they support him for reasons other than his racist language, which we don't have time to go through. But there's all sorts of things starting from the launch of his campaign all the way up until the latest campaign, the way he demonized people trying to come to our country on the caravan. And they'll say, well, I'm not racist. I just voted for him because, you know, I didn't like Hillary Clinton. And I just want to say that that's not... That doesn't make you not racist. It actually makes you racist. If you support somebody who does racist things, that makes you racist. So I just want to establish that.
Well, I'm glad we got that straight. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You notice the level of shaming going on in our culture, value shaming, racism shaming? Well, that was Kirsten Powers of CNN. She's at it. Liberals just seem to be okay with shaming white women for voting for President Trump, for Donald Trump. It's unbelievable about what is going on in our culture today. Well, with us now is Dr. Carol Swain, a dear friend and a scholar in these areas. She's an award-winning political science, a former professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University, and an author. Dr. Swain, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's my pleasure.
Well, thank you for taking time. Are you getting that turkey ready and all the fixings to be with family?
I'm expecting 15 people in my house, in addition to the people that already live there. So we'll have quite a few.
Yeah, that sounds like a big crowd. Well, tell me, let's just talk about this a little bit. The women who have voted for Donald Trump when he was running for office. You know, we seem to hear this narrative a lot, don't we?
Well, first of all, the dear white woman narrative started before Trump, the shaming of white women who were conservative and not pro-choice. And if you Google dear white women, a number of articles and things will pop up. And the interview you played, I found that extremely offensive because I can think of, 15 or 20 reasons why a white woman might not want to vote, why a white woman would support Donald Trump over any Democrat. And some of those reasons have to do with the fact that the Democratic Party is totally anti-white. And so whites women. They have themselves as white people. They have their own interests, but they also have brothers. They have sons. They have uncles. They have nephews. I mean, this is racism against white people, and I believe it's totally unacceptable. Women that are pro-life, why would they vote for the Democrats? Women that are Christians, why would they vote for the Democrats? Women that are pro-American, why would they vote for the Democrats? There's nothing about the Democratic Party that I see that would encourage me, if I were a white woman, to support them, because they are totally against everything that I stand for as a conservative black woman. I'm not white, but I find it very offensive, the use of racism to silence white women who vote based on their own values and conscience.
Well, Carol, you are a black woman born and raised in rural southern poverty. I'm a white male, grew up in urban Kansas City, went to a very urban mixed high school. We learned how to get along, but Carol, I'm with you. I'm offended by this as well, and it's not because I'm white. It's just because it really, the burden of hearing you're a racist if you believe a certain way all the time, when you know in your heart that you're not, it just is very burdensome for many.
It is, and this whole idea that the feminists were supposed to be so pro-choice, they don't extend rights and choice to women who happen to be conservative. And with their argument, believe every woman, they don't believe women when they're conservative, and they come forward with allegations against liberal men. And so what they do is totally self-serving, and it's hypocritical. And it's something that I think we would be better off if the white women that they're shaming, I believe, in the suburbs, into compliance, that those women just stood up and fought back.
And I was going to ask you, what advice might you have? There's a lot of folks listening to this right now, Carol, that struggle with this sort of thing. They probably hear it from some of their own family or friends or whatnot. What might you tell someone or advise someone that is dealing with this as well?
I can tell you that it's terribly wrong. I have a white friend that's my age, meaning she's in her early 60s. She has two daughters who haven't spoken to her since she voted for Donald Trump. And so these women are just totally deluded. And I think that we have to just recognize that there's some kind of delusion that's taken place, and that there are people that are exploiting the ignorance, in some cases, of other people for political gain. And they're using racial and ethnic minorities, as well as women, I would say the LGBT population, not the activists, just the regular people that may be homosexual or struggling with gender dysphoria. Those people are being used to advance a political agenda that may not, I would say not may not, that is not in their long-term self-interest or the self-interest of our nation as a whole.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's Thanksgiving Eve. We're talking to Dr. Carol Swain just about the value shaming that's going on and the racism that the racist claims that are just so loosely thrown around. Now, Dr. Swain, you have a new book out. Real quick, we've just got about 20 seconds. What's the title of your new book? It's coming out.
It's Debating Immigration, the second edition. It's already out. It has 20 essays. It covers immigration in Europe and America, and it deals with Donald Trump's plan, and it has practical recommendations. Cambridge University Press. It's available wherever books are sold.
All right. Dr. Swain, thank you so much. You have a blessed Thanksgiving, okay? Thanks for joining us.
You too. Bye.
Well, coming up next, where do we go after all the dust settles in Congress? Or will the dust settle? We're going to talk with one of our dear friends, Dr. Alveda King, evangelist. She loves the Lord and she loves you. You're listening to Washington Watch on this Thanksgiving Eve edition. All this great content, you can find it on TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins or read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
It's Wednesday. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones. Honored to be sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, in the aftermath of the midterm elections, as the dust begins to settle, evangelist Alveda King, she wonders why Christians would roll over and play dead at the polls. Why would Christians run for cover rather than fight the good fight of faith at the polls? Why would we go undercover when someone punches us in the gut for standing for biblical truth? That's a great question. And I also wonder what's going to be on Alveda King's Thanksgiving Day table. Woo, I bet it's good. With us now is evangelist Alveda King, also the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and a dear friend of the Family Research Council. Alveda, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. And believe it or not, I'm just leaving Pittsburgh, headed for the airport in Pittsburgh, leaving Cornerstone TV, doing a Thanksgiving show. And we had a Thanksgiving meal. I did cook out of my cookbook, Gigi's Home for the Holidays, but we answered some of those hard questions that you just asked at the top of this segment. We did kind of talk about some of those things there.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting season, hasn't it? It's things didn't turn out how Republicans thought and believers thought it might, and yet it also lived up to fears that many had. Where do we go from here, and what advice might you have? What's on your heart?
Well, actually, when I think about the midterm, when we consider all that happened, there was something for everybody to be gained. I tend to look at the losses and the gains, but we kept the Senate. And when I say we, those of us who still vote according to Bible principles, keep your babies, don't kill babies in the womb, don't kill kids after that, the sanctity of marriage, God's way, all of that. So the Senate, we did hold the Senate, and it is the Senate that selects the Supreme Court justices and confirms them. So that's a good thing. We lost the House. So that means we're going to have a new battle there with resistance to these same principles. So we can expect that. But rather than to look and hold our heads down and feel discouraged, we should be encouraged because we did win to a certain extent. I really want to remind people of that. Moving forward, and that is why I asked the question, we as Christians must vote. It's a civic responsibility. Civic in the Latin meaning civilian, to be civil and to be civilians who support and uphold the word of God. So we still have that obligation to do that. And as we do it, we can keep praying and believe that God will continue to strengthen us for the days ahead.
And indeed, we do have a dog in this fight, don't we? We're fighting for life, liberty, the unborn, all kinds of folks. So we need to keep in the battle.
And more recently, even for prison reform, you see what's happening out of President Trump and his administration looking for fair ways to deal with prison reform, reminding people that when we look at immigration, it's very important to make sure as America grows stronger and stronger, we can help others. But we want to help people to come into our country who love us and love our country. So there's the perspective is what is so important, Russ. How we look at it and what we have accomplished and what we can do together. And America really is better off. The unemployment rate really is down. America is going back to work. We see that in the area of the sanctity of life, life in the womb, for example, that there is much legislation that has been advanced for that. What I like about the prison reform piece, it is women-friendly, looking at the female prisoners, the women who are pregnant while they're in jail and all of that, taking another good look at how to help American citizens. So as we continue to do that, that's why I say don't be discouraged and don't stay home from the polls. If there's a runoff in anybody's community, people should get back out and vote again.
Mm-hmm. And as we gather, you know, for that turkey on Thanksgiving, we really do have so much to be thankful for, don't we?
We still do. My granddaddy, Martin Luther King Sr., even after the death of his son, Martin, after the death of his son, A.D., my dad, the death of his wife, and all of those were under tragic circumstances, granddaddy, until he left the planet, would say, thank God for what we have left. And that is something that I always remember. And, you know, even if someone is listening to us during this season, all the way through Christmas into the new year, if you've lost someone, if you're having a hard time, don't give up. Thank God for what you have left. And you have people who are still loving you, still praying for you. And to please be encouraged even during these times. So I'm always very sensitive. I've had people say, well, that's easy for you to say, give thanks. You have this and you have that. Well, there are things that I've lost as well, but we still have Christ. So that is what we gain every day. And we can give thanks that God loves us. That's something that we can all thank God for.
Alveda, thank you so much. Always just a breath of fresh air. And you have a blessed Thanksgiving, and we're thankful for you.
You too.
Okay?
Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the turkey. God bless you.
All right. God bless you, too. Just love her. Alveda King, evangelist Alveda King. Russ Jones here sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. Well, coming up next, what does history have to say about Thanksgiving and being thankful? When we return, we'll talk with historian and best-selling author Bill Federer. He's always a wealth of information. Don't go away. We'll be right back on this Thanksgiving Eve edition of Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Is Planned Parenthood a champion for women? In reality, Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading killer of unborn children. Despite this, they have been hailing themselves as the voice of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities today, their scandals continue to pile up. Planned Parenthood's current motto is care, no matter what. A more fitting motto would be profit, no matter what. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood. Again, that's frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer to these questions should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, claiming they are ineffective and harmful. But are they? Studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. To find out more, visit frc.org/SOCE.
Are you ready to take a stand? Now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just a tap of the screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Yeah, you hear that music, you know what it means. We're rounding third, heading towards home. Excited to be with you here today. Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You are listening to Washington Watch. Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. This show powered by the Family Research Council. Well, the Thanksgiving holiday season provides us an opportunity to dig into the history of our nation and what drove its founding principles. Thomas Jefferson acknowledged the best support of good government was the liberty to worship our Creator, as he wrote in a letter to Captain John Thomas of the New Hope Baptist Church on November 18, 1887. So many nuggets like that, and I can't think of anyone better to sift through and highlight those nuggets than Bill Federer. He's a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch. Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time here, being with us here today as we kind of dig into Thanksgiving and what does it mean? What did it mean back in the day when our nation was the soil was just being turned over by these folks that came to this new land? And I know you spend your lifetime looking at these issues. And what word might you have for our listeners on this today?
Well, big picture, it's the difference between top-down and bottom-up. So England was ruled by kings. Europe was ruled by kings. Matter of fact, nearly 6,000 years of world history, the most common form of government is a king. You do what he says or he kills you, right? So it's a pyramid structure to society, and it goes back to the fallen nature of Cain killing Abel. It's just magnified through military technology. You can kill more people. Anyway, if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. If you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason, or you're a slave. And so the king of England became the most powerful king on the planet. He was, in a sense, a globalist. And America's founders decided they didn't like that, so they flipped it and made the people the king. So it's a bottom-up. It's a polarity change in world government. Instead of power flowing from the top down, it flows from the bottom up. Now, where did Americans get these ideas? From the New England pastors and ultimately from the pilgrims. Now, I'll paint the picture here. The pilgrims fled England. Why? Because you had to believe what the king told you to believe. Otherwise, you would be drugged before the star chamber. It's a room with stars on the ceiling, and they would cut your ear off and cut your nose in half and brand you on the face as a heretic with the letters SL for seditious libel. The archbishop's name was William Laud, so the Puritans called it the Sign of Laud, right? And so the pilgrims decided to flee to Holland. And when Spain threatened to attack Holland, the pilgrims decided to flee again. And they were going to go to Jamestown, and they figured they're so far away that they can sort of do their little pilgrim thing, and they won't be noticed. But on the way, they get caught in the storm. The boat has to go back and forth, get recaused. They swap out the Speedwell for the Mayflower. They get to America's shore, and they're 500 miles off course. You think, oh, no big deal, just sail down the coast. Well, it's winter, it's stormy, their boat's all beat up, they have a cracked beam. And just off the coast of Cape Cod is called the Graveyard of Ships. Over 3,000 ships have sunk on the shoals, the sandbars that go way out into the ocean, and then the storm batters the ship. So the pilgrims almost sink. The captain takes them back to Plymouth Rock and says, everybody off the boat. It's too dangerous to sail anymore. And the pilgrims, like, raise their hand, and they say, who's going to be in charge of us? There's no king-appointed person on our boat, right? Who's going to – the whole world's ruled by kings. The king of England's the most powerful ruler. Who's going to be in charge? They do something unique. They give themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact. We, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together into a civil body politic to enact just and equal laws and to render all due submission to the laws we pass. Simple, revolutionary. It was in the womb of this little Mayflower was this little polarity change from top down to bottom up. And where did the pilgrims get this idea? From their pastor, John Robinson. Mm-hmm. He was not a king-appointed pastor. He was a congregationalist pastor. And so they basically took the congregational model of church government, where everyone fasted and prayed and voted, and they made it their model of government. A clear connection. And anyway, I'll pause there. But this is why we look back to the pilgrims.
Well, Bill, let me ask you, you have a new book out, Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. You know, we all see that picture, right, of the Native American Indians and the pilgrims, and it looks like they're all just having a great old time singing Kumbaya and whatnot. But I don't think that was quite the environment, was it?
No, well, half the pilgrims died the first winter. And then, of course, the miracle of Squanto. The next spring, out of the woods, walks this Indian who talks to them in perfect English. Lo and behold, Squanto had been kidnapped by some unscrupulous European fisherman, sold as a slave in Malaga, Spain, purchased by some monks and given his freedom, hitchhikes his way back to England, works for several years, finally finds a shipping boat to drop him back off on the coast of America, only to find his entire tribe is dead. A disease has wiped them out. And William Bradford says a French ship was shipwrecked there just a couple years earlier. The sailors got ashore, but the Indians never left watching them and dogging them until they got the advantage and killed them all. But evidently, one of them must have had an illness, wiped out this tribe. Had Squanto not been kidnapped, he would have died in the plague. But here he is. He comes to these pilgrims' rescue, speaks to them in the English language. Oh, yeah, I used to live in London. Yeah. Oh, this place, I know this like the back of my hand. I grew up here. And he tells them how to catch fish and beaver and make popcorn and all that. But he rescues them. He's their interpreter with the other tribes. And so it's a fascinating story of God's hand. And because of the good relationship Squanto put them on, the first Thanksgiving took place. And the Indians show up with their deer and turkey. And there's a chief Massasoit got sick, and the pilgrim Edward Winslow goes in there and doctors him up, and he gets well. That contributes to this enormous peace they had that went on for over an entire generation. Now, the fine print was, if you doctor a chief and he dies, you die too. So Edward Winslow is putting his life on the line by going in there. Yeah. But it's a fascinating story. And one of the pilgrim ships was actually captured by the Muslims. That's right. They saved up 800 pounds of beaver skins to ship back to London for trade. And a Turkish man of war captured it in the English Channel, took it to Morocco, sold the crew into slavery. So a lot of the stuff we're dealing with today, even the pilgrims had to deal with it.
Let me ask you this. What about issues of freedom of religion and conscience? What was that? What did that look like in the 16th century Europe where they were fleeing from?
Well, that's the biggest issue. So Western Europe was all Catholic, and then the Muslims invade. And in 1529, 100,000 Muslims surround Vienna, Austria. Now, the Holy Roman Emperor is Charles V of Spain. He's the defender of Christendom, of Europe. And he's faced with a double dilemma, the Muslim invasion on one hand and the Protestant Reformation on the other, 1517, Martin Luther. So he's got problems on the inside and the outside. He tries to stop the invasion of the Muslims, but it's so serious, he finally makes a deal with the Protestants. It's called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. And this is the first treaty ever to recognize Protestants. And in this Peace of Augsburg, it's a little Latin phrase that had enormous repercussions. The phrase was, cuius regio, eius religio, which means, whose is the reign, his is the religion. In other words, look, Protestant king, believe whatever you want in your kingdom. Let's just work together against these Muslims who are invading Europe, because they sort of want to kill us all. And it stopped the invasion, but it started a domino effect in the next century where different kings believed different things. England was Anglican. Scotland was Presbyterian. Holland was Dutch Reformed. Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran. Switzerland, Calvinist. And, of course, Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland remained Catholic. But if you did not believe the way your king did, it was considered treason, and you fled. And so Europe is thrown into this mass migration of people shifting from one country to another for conscience sake. Those were the ones that spilled over and founded colonies in America. And so you go back, each colony in America was started by a different Christian denomination. Most people don't realize that. Virginia was an Anglican colony. Massachusetts was a Puritan colony. Connecticut and New Hampshire were Congregationalist colonies. Rhode Island was a Baptist colony. Maryland was a Catholic colony. New York was a Dutch Reformed colony. And Pennsylvania was a Quaker colony. And they did not get along. And they would tar and feather each other. But then they had to work together against the King of England. After the Revolution, their attitude changed to, we may not always agree on religion, but you were willing to fight and die for my freedom. I need to let you practice your faith. And so their one big fear was the federal government was going to pick one Christian denomination and make it the national one, which is what every country in Europe had. And so they wanted to tie the federal government's hands so that religion was left free under the state's jurisdiction and the individual church's jurisdiction. And so the idea was that they should have freedom of conscience, that the federal government will not caused the same error that the European kings did. Everybody's free to believe, and each state could choose their own particular preferences.
Yeah, I would venture to say you're absolutely right. Most folks probably don't know that. And, you know, as you know, George Washington, in his farewell address, September 19th, 1976, he said, reason and experience both forbid us to expect the national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious people or religious principle. Only have a few minutes left, Bill. That's pretty important for us to understand, isn't it?
Right. So 1796, Washington's farewell. And he says that here we have this connection between personal virtue and public felicity or happiness. And if you can picture a spectrum of power, one side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government, you have power concentrated into the hands of a king. He rules through fear. You do what he says or he kills you. The no government side would be anarchy unless each citizen is taught the law. It's like every person downloads a behavioral app on their iPhone. Instead of a GPS telling you where to turn, it tells you how to act. Be nice to this person. Don't yell at that person. And in Israel's case, the Levites were the computer geeks that help you to download the app, the law. But the big question was, why would you follow it? What would motivate you to follow an internal moral? Ancient Israel introduced for all times the key ingredient. There is a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair. And he's going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. It creates something in your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country really, truly believes this, you can maintain complete order, safety, and security for property. Women can go anywhere and be safe without any police, right? So you take the power of a king, separate it into the hands of the people. It's chaos unless the people have internal morals, a law. And why do you follow that? This God of the Bible who's watching everyone, wants you to be fair, is going to hold you accountable in the future. Now, it only works for the God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says you can rape a woman, right, if nobody's around. But the God of the Bible says do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
And as folks gather around, just real quickly, what one or just primary thoughts might you embed in our listeners that can be shared around the table tomorrow that we can glean from those founding days and those founding fathers?
Well, one last thought with the pilgrims. They financed their voyage through adventurers or investors in England who set up a company. And it had bylaws that said everything was owned in common for 7 years. Everything gained by cooking, trading, fishing goes into ye common stock. And everybody's paid out of ye common stock. And after 7 years, it's divided up. And William Bradford said nobody wanted to get out. He says the young men that were strong did twice as much work but only got the same amount as the others. And the aged men thought it was a disrespect to be classified with the younger. The women objected to having to wash other men's clothes. And so William Bradford said, we scrapped this and this communal living plan. And he said, everybody got their own plot of land. Whatever grew on it, you got to keep. And he says, this motivated everyone. The women went willingly into their field with their little ones, and whereas before, to force them would have been thought great oppression. So here we are. The pilgrims learned the lessons that communism, socialism does not work. Private property motivates people, and then you're able to be generous with what God has blessed you with.
Yeah, wow. Just incredible insights. And hopefully, you know, the opportunities we have to reconnect. Isn't that important to reconnect to our history, reconnect to those initial reasons why people came here to this land? So often the focus gets a little skewed and altered, and it's important to remember why they actually lost so many lives to come here seeking this new land.
Well, it really is. One of my favorite quotes is from Arthur Schlesinger Jr., a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian on John F. Kennedy's staff. The quote is, history is to the nation what memory is to the individual. So if you can imagine an individual who has lost their memory, maybe they have Alzheimer's, they forgot who they are, they forgot who you are, it's sad. Well, guess what? We have national Alzheimer's. Here we are, the freest country that planet Earth has ever seen, where you get to decide what you want to do with your life and where you want to live and who you want to marry and what food and what clothes you want to wear, not a burqa, right? You have this freedom. But we forgot how we got here. We forgot the people that suffered and died and spent 66-day voyage and crossed 3,000-mile ocean, the pilgrims, to come across here. Half of them died the first winter.
We've got to wrap it up, Bill.
Anyway, just appreciate you refocusing on the pilgrims this Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Bill Federer. Thank you so much, historian, best-selling author. You have a blessed Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for being here with us, friends, on this Thanksgiving Eve edition of Washington Watch. I've been Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, the show powered by the Family Research Council. And I leave you with this, 1 Chronicles 16:34, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. And friends, if the waters don't rise and the Lord tarries, indeed, we will see you tomorrow. Be blessed and be well.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.